We'll launch the June 21, 2013 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the friendly confines of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, with another rain report. AMSAT, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation, has been credited with amateur radio presence in space. But AMSAT still faces challenges, even with its partnership abroad and stateside. AMSAT North America President Barry Baines, WD4ASW, addressed some of those challenges during his talk at the AMSAT Forum at the recently concluded 2013 Dayton Hamvention.
I'd like to remind people as to what AMSAT is and who we are. We're a scientific and education organization established in 1969. We are focused on building and operating amateur radio satellites. That's what we do. And our mantra is we want to keep amateur radio in space. We talk about partnerships. We can't do this by ourselves. We do, in fact, partner with a variety of groups, organizations, and foundations. And, of course, we're also interested in technical and scientific innovation. And you will see that with the Fox One design that Tony will be talking about later this morning. In terms of a vision, how do we make this sort of happen? We want to deploy satellite systems. So we're talking about building and deploying multiple systems. The goal eventually being we want to have an amateur radio satellite available any time of the day because we have enough up there where basically something's coming over the horizon as the other one's receding. So we want to support a stream of satellites as a way to keep things going. If you want to summarize what we're about, we want to keep amateur radio in space. And we want to talk about how we're going to do that. From an organizational perspective for this year, I've put down what I call challenges and expectations. Some of them are, in fact, issues we have to deal with, but also expectations in terms of meeting goals that fulfill the organizational's purpose. I do want to mention educational partnerships just in passing. We've signed an agreement with Virginia Tech, and we have been partnering with Vanderbilt for them to put payloads on our Fox-class satellites. But we also have educational partnerships evolving in terms of K-12 and the old mantra of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So we've been working very closely for the past year with the ARRL, who's also interested in putting amateur radio in the classroom, and that relationship is being managed for us by Mark Hammond, N8MH. I want to talk about the regulatory environment because things are evolving, and the big thing that people know about is international traffic and arms regulations and the stranglehold that is placed on us in terms of our relationships with other AMSAT organizations and working with foreign nationals. It's been a major impediment for our ability to coordinate and cooperate with organizations around the world. I do want to point out that in terms of Fox, we are trying to put out information in the public domain so that people are aware of the technical development that's taking place. By placing the public domain, we can, in fact, talk about it with foreign nationals. So the primary way you do that is by publication. The AMSAT proceedings that was published last fall in conjunction with our space symposium was the vehicle that we got a lot of information out into the public domain, and that has allowed us now to talk about some of the technical details that were released in that situation. Subsequent to that, we're publishing articles in the AMSAT Journal, and of course, we have another symposium coming up this fall. So under ITAR, we can only talk about technical details regarding satellite construction, subsystems, components, and the like by first putting it into the public domain. So keep in mind, AMSAT is a munition supplier, and why is that? Because building satellites are considered munitions in the eyes of the U.S. government in terms of how they are regulated. Some recent developments over the last 12 months. From a commercial perspective, ITAR has put a stranglehold on the commercial industry of building and selling satellites. So the realization has come that perhaps ITAR needs to be modified. The Department of Defense and the Department of State put together what's called the 1248 report, which was basically a requirement by Congress to review ITAR and its implications. And they listed a series of things where they think it's appropriate to pull systems out of ITAR and place them into what's called export administration regulations under the Department of Commerce. So I've listed here what they say are some of the things that would make sense, and they're recommending be pulled from ITAR. And clearly, what AMSAT is doing, satellites that do not contain technology unique to military applications, hopefully would be applied to our satellites as well as the commercial industry. So 1248 is good news for us. And of course, it allows us to have technical conversations with foreign nationals while you're developing the satellite, the system, or whatever. So you don't have to put things in public domain. You can have an ongoing conversation as the technology is evolving. So is this going to take place? Is this transition to EAR going to happen? The National Defense Authorization Act that was passed in December and signed by President Obama in January specifically has in it a section regarding the removal of satellites and related items from the munitions list. Now, in other words, military satellites would no longer be considered part of the munitions list. And the Congress has basically given the discretion to the President to move things from ITAR to EAR. So if he's going to do that, how will that happen? The Department of State, through the Director of Defense Trade Controls, is going to be releasing rules as to how they propose that this transition be done and what components, systems, satellite designs, whatever would be appropriate for that transition. We expect that that set of rules will be coming out very shortly. There is then a 45-day comment period for the public to respond. And of course, we as an organization intimately involved with this will be looking very carefully in the rules to see what impact they have and whether it's going to meet our particular needs. Those comments will be submitted by the 45-day deadline. Comments are reviewed then by the government, and then they come out with a final set of rules. And then once they release the final set of rules, two things have to happen. One is Congress has 30 days to review and say yay or nay, they don't like what the DOS is proposing. And of course, the President has to decide whether or not to actually pull the trigger and make the transition. And then, of course, the bureaucracy continues because it will take a period of transition to get people realigned from the old rules to the new rules, so expect a six-month transition period. So the bottom line is, by 2014, a year from now, it is possible that we will no longer have to contend with the onerous restrictions placed on us by ITAR. So I am hopeful that that will, in fact, take place, and, of course, it will be a major impact for us on our ability to cooperate and coordinate with foreign nationals, as we did for so many years prior to the implementation of ITAR. Also in the recent past, you may or may not have heard about this, I do talk about this in the Apogee View that is being printed now for the new journal. There was a public notice put out on 15 March by the FCC talking about CubeSats and whether they're appropriate to be placed under experimental licensing or amateur radio satellite licensing. This has major implications for the CubeSat community, those organizations besides AMSAT, universities and the like, that have been building CubeSats for the past few years, and whether they now have to get what's called an experimental license under Part 5 versus an amateur radio satellite license under Part 97 for their CubeSats. Interestingly, the FCC has asked the International Amateur Radio Union Satellite Advisory, who does frequency coordination for satellite frequencies, to coordinate anything that's placed in the amateur radio satellite service bands, including experimental satellites. And they have responded so far by only saying that satellites that have been manifested up through the what's called the Atlanta 4 launches that take place later this year, they will in fact coordinate. Then subsequent to that, there was a workshop. Alan Biddle over here represented AMSAT for us at that CubeSat workshop. Dave Sumner of the League was there representing the IARU. He's not an IARU officer, but he agreed to go to the meeting to represent them since their people were not available. And it became an opportunity for both the League and the IARU to gain a better appreciation of what's happening in the CubeSat community. So the FCC, interestingly, was invited. They were going to go, but with sequestration taking place, they canceled the travel plan. So we did not, or nor did the CubeSat community, have an opportunity to talk to the FCC about the implications of these changes in licensing for small satellites. The IARU satellite advisor is concerned that adding experimental licensing coordination is going to be a problem for them. And they would prefer, the IARU that is, to have separate frequencies for experimental satellites. We, of course, have a very significant interest in this subject because we're building CubeSats. We're going to put scientific payloads into our satellites. We don't want to have a situation where people make it confused as to what's appropriate, which class of licensing. So we've made it clear we see value in what the CubeSat community is doing from a university perspective. We do not want to see CubeSats getting away from amateur radio. It's a feeding ground. It's a development field for people in universities becoming interested in satellite construction and amateur radio. It provides, if you will, a foundation for future satellite builders for AMSAT. It provides a future in terms of bringing new memberships on board. It enhances the value of amateur radio overall. So there are some significant impacts of this FCC policy guideline that was put out that we're seeking some clarification on.
You're listening to a status report about AMSAT, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation, from its North American president, Barry Baines, WD4ASW. We'll continue with Barry's report in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, available from therainreport.com, on demand, 24/7.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Moving on back to some internal activities. Everybody's aware that our website was hacked earlier this year. We put up a relatively quick website to try to at least get something back in with an AMSAT website presence. That's been going on since February. It is certainly not the final product by any stretch of the imagination. A lot of the features and capabilities of the old website we need to get reestablished under the new scenario. Status reports, satellite tracking are two areas that are of particular interest, I know, to our membership. And we are working right now with an outside firm, Freshy Sites, to help us sort of spruce up the website and help us do some of the legwork that our volunteers are certainly capable of doing but simply don't have the time to do. The trade-off between paying someone to get it done within a specific time frame versus depending upon capable and willing volunteers, but the time frame takes longer because they have other priorities, other obligations, and so the how quickly you can get things done is based on a trade-off of using volunteer members versus paying someone to do it. The AMSAT Journal. I mentioned this at the symposium last fall. 2012 was a major challenge for us in getting the AMSAT Journal out. We only had one issue released in the year 2012. But we have been able to convince Joanne Meinpaw, who's our new AMSAT Journal editor, to take over the reins. And she has done a magnificent job getting things back on track. So the first three issues of this year, of course there are a total of six issues released every year, are basically on time. Now, their ability to publish is based upon material to publish. So I encourage everyone to think about what you might be able to contribute as an item for the AMSAT Journal, whether it's about your particular station, the lessons learned, whatever engineering or technology you want to share with the group. If you're involved with HamFest and representing AMSAT at HamFest, tell us about it. If you're doing demonstrations at schools or with clubs or the like, tell us about it. We need material for inclusion in the AMSAT Journal. Each one of you that has been involved with satellite operations has a story to tell. And I think many of us would love to hear those stories. So think about how you might be able to help contribute to the basket of material that Joanne can pull from to keep us going in terms of publication. Now, Joanne, as you may recall, was our former chief of the AMSAT News Service. With her transition to the AMSAT Journal, Lee McLam has taken over that position for us, and he's doing a great job. But it means we're one less editor in terms of having someone to spread the workload around. So we have more editors available to trade off. That means you may be able to help the current crew, instead of doing it once every other week, maybe having it do it once every third week or every fourth week. And of course, that helps spread the workload around. It keeps people fresh. It doesn't overburden them. So we're looking for people to help us put the ANS together. It is not a, quote, difficult job. It does take some time. You have to have some basic writing skills. You can put sentences together, you know, that are coherent. But basically, other than that, that's all it requires. And it just, again, dedicating a little bit of time to provide what is a world-class publication. ANS is sent out every Saturday or Saturday evening, and it receives worldwide attention. It gets repeated on bulletin boards, websites, nets, and the like around the world, and in some pretty unusual places to boot. So you make a difference, you make an impact if you're going to help us with the ANS. Another thing that recently came up is the IARU Region 1 folks have proposed that we add a downlink frequency for amateur radio 2-meter satellite operation on the very bottom of the 2-meter band. It's basically going to be linear only, not FM, CW and sideband only. And they're looking for support from Region 2. AMSAT, of course, is North America. We're part of Region 2. The ARRL is the member society for us in terms of the IARU. They've come to us and asked us for our comment and thought about it. We, of course, before making a recommendation to the league, want to have a conversation with people. So EMEers, weak signal people, people who may think that this may impact their current turf, if you will, we want to hear from you, because we want to know if there's going to be unintended consequences if we endorse this particular idea. Clearly, there's a need for more spectrum for downlinks on satellites, because with all the stuff that's now flying, particularly with the advent of the CubeSats and the number of CubeSats flying, there is a need for spectrum. So before we make a decision, we would like to hear from anybody who has an interest in this matter to bring it to our attention. Also want to mention our annual space symposium. Last year we had it in Orlando. It was a rousing success. A lot of good papers presented, particularly with Fox, the release of public domain material at that. And of course, for those of you who were AMSAT members in 2012, you got the DVD earlier this year that had all the material from that symposium, plus all the previous symposiums that we had electronically. So you've got a treasure trove of material from the AMSAT symposiums of the past year, as well as prior years. So hopefully by reviewing that material, it'll give you an idea of what the symposium is all about. Please consider joining us in Houston the first weekend in November. I think you'll find it very rewarding in terms of understanding what's going on in the world of amateur radio satellites. No plans have been set yet as far as potential tours or things to do outside of the symposium itself. Those are being developed. But Houston's a great place to be if you're interested in space and communications. IARU Satellite Advisor will have his meeting. He alternates it yearly between us and AMSAT UK Colloquium. It's our turn this year, so Hans will be with us from that perspective. I want to wrap things up by talking about the organizational impact overall, and particularly in terms of membership trends. December 2012 was about the same as in 2010. We had took a dip in 2011. But these numbers are significantly below the heyday of AMSAT membership when we had the Phase 3 satellites going along. I mention this because our long-term viability is based upon membership. And we're concerned about why is it that memberships are not taking off, if you will, either in terms of renewals or in perhaps bringing new people on board. So I don't know if it's the economy or the aging amateur population or the relative lack of satellites and whether or not that has had an impact upon people's willingness to join the organization. Certainly with FunQ being launched later this year and with Fox being launched, we'll talk about that. We hope that having more assets in orbit will, in fact, bring greater interest to the organization. Certainly the AMSAT Journal debacle last year, not getting 6 issues out, may have had a negative impact as well. That course has been resolved. It's our income from memberships that pays the bills, that pays the ongoing concern, whether it's Martha's salary, paying the rent for the office that we have, paying for the publications that are being published, and the like. It's the membership dues that provides us with the operating funds to keep the organization going. Those funds are not used to support our actual satellite construction programs. We have separate campaigns for those funds because the AMSAT dues simply do not provide enough spread to allow us to cover both. So as I said, membership is critical to sustaining our organization down the road. AMSAT members are encouraged to recruit others to join AMSAT. It is the word of mouth, personal relationship that brings people to an organization. If you belong to AMSAT, please talk it up with your neighbors, with your friends, with your ham radio buddies, and if they're interested in satellites, encourage them to join the organization. Their membership dues directly benefits us economically, but of course it benefits them from being a part of this organization and what we provide. So what can we do as AMSAT members in general? The first item I have is to help rebuild the base. But we can also do other things. Recognize the projects we do are multi-year. Your dues do not cover simply our ability to provide satellites in orbit. We have to have extra funding to support that. We want people to use the existing satellites. Yeah, they've dwindled in count over the last couple of years, but they're still operational. It's not like we have nothing available right now. And of course, we're doing demos outside through Keith Pugh and Roger Lay and all. They're showing what you can do with today's satellite technology. So it's still there. Please use it and encourage others to become aware of the fact that, yes, amateur radio is still in orbit. As I noted earlier, write articles for the AMSAT Journal. Volunteer your time and talent to the organization. Find an area that you have an interest in that you think could help the organization and help us to achieve that goal that you think we ought to accomplish. We're an equal opportunity exploiter. We do not expect the leadership team to do everything. We're dependent upon members spreading the workload around, taking the initiative, helping us to accomplish and make this a better organization.
This has been an excerpt from a 2013 Dayton Hamvention presentation by AMSAT, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation, North America President, Barry Baines, WD4 ASW. The RAIN Report is copyright 1990-2013 RAIN, all rights reserved. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.